All right, welcome everybody to Thursday, October 16th, Committee Meeting 2014. Tonight, we're going to focus on the CIF, but before we do that, you all received a policy for remote participation in public meetings in email the other day. The Board of Supervisors has adopted a policy regarding remote participation for supervisors. This policy is a result of legislation that occurred in 2013 and that was amended again in 2014 by the General Assembly. And it says that members may participate uniformly remotely. In our case, our policy will be that you need to notify the chairman of the FIC by noon of the day of the meeting. You can only do this twice a year. You have to state your reasons for doing so. I need to state the records for publicly why you're doing so. And the person who is participating remotely has to be heard by everybody that is physically in the room. And the person cannot participate remotely if we do not have a quorum physically in this room. Okay? So what I'd like is for somebody to make a motion to adopt the policy for remote participation in public meetings for the Fiscal Impact Committee is has been presented to you
motion
for this meeting.
Motion made.
Seconded.
Okay, made by Toby and seconded by Linda. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. How many do we have absent? Four, five. You do. Okay.
7 years.
All right, now that we've done that, are we going to bring Mr. McDonald on remotely? We couldn't do this until we adopted this policy.
That's what we decided. What? He needs to be cut off?
You might think we forgot about him.
What's up?
Not much. How are you guys?
Great, Sam. This is Ralph. How are you feeling?
Not bad for an old peg leg, I suppose.
Okay, well, let the record show that Mr. Adamo has been brought into the meeting remotely after the committee adopted our policy for remote participation in public meetings. Sam, are you participating from home?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and the reason Mr. Adamo is participating remotely is due to a temporary disability as a result of a medical condition. Okay, and I think that's
a bit of an understatement.
I'm just satisfying the statutory requirements, Sam.
How are you doing?
Not bad. I mean, I still have swelling from the surgery, and I'm not allowed to put any weight on it. But, you know, I'm doing my PT three times a day, icing like crazy to kind of get the swelling under control. But I'm hanging in there.
Good.
Great. Glad to hear that. We look forward to seeing you back in action soon.
Yeah, as do I.
Okay, what we're going to do today, the end goal for today is to hopefully adopt the 2014 CIF calculations. And once this committee adopts those, then they will be taken to the Finance, Government Services and Operations Committee, probably at our November meeting, I would assume.
Yep.
And assuming that they go through the committee, regardless of whether they're amended or not, then that recommendation will go to the full Board of Supervisors, very likely at our first December business meeting. The reason I give that calendar is that the board typically cancels our second business meeting in November and December due to the holidays. And we have decided to do that again this year. So our first business meeting in November is November 5th. That raises an interesting dilemma, Dan.
No,
because, I'm sorry, no, the first full visit.
Your Finance Committee meeting's on the 13th.
Yeah, that poses a dilemma.
13th of November.
Which means it couldn't get to the full board till December.
Yeah,
right.
December.
So we could get there in December, the first.
It's scheduled to go to public hearing December 10th. It has to go to
You're right, it's got to go to public hearing. So we go public hearing December 10th. And it, we could either adopt it that night or we could move it to the first business meeting in January. If there's no contention, I'll consider suspending the rules in the December meeting and adopting it, have the board adopt it. But if there's contention, then I would probably delay it until the business meeting in January. So with that...
What time is Finance Committee?
Finance Committee always starts at 5.
5.
And it's always the, well, I don't say always, it's the second Tuesday of the month. However, in November, the second Tuesday of the month falls on Veterans Day. And we have tried to reschedule it 2 or 3 times now. It appears it's going to fall, we're waiting to hear back from everybody, it appears it's going to fall on the third Wednesday of November.
So that's not the 13th
then? The 13th.
So that's the 19th.
Heather put out an email yesterday asking, I believe it was the third Wednesday, November, correct, Dory?
Yes.
Because we had issues with all the dates that were chosen, and we couldn't get the right attendance. So, and we had a little mix-up. So right now, it's tentatively the third Wednesday of November, and then the public hearings are always, unless there's a holiday, and there's rarely holidays on Wednesday, public hearings are always on the second Wednesday of each month at 6. Finances at 5. Public hearings of the full board are at 6. Board business meetings are the first Wednesday and the third Wednesday at 4. So everybody confused now? If you're not sure, yeah. If you're not sure, just come ask me.
Where's the Finance Committee meeting?
We meet in the full, in the boardroom. Right.
That's November.
So, yeah, November 19th.
November 19th is the tentative date. Heather's going to confirm that shortly, but November 19th is now what appears to be the date.
The public hearing would be the 10th.
Of December. So there would be time to advertise it and get it to public hearing. Okay. So what we need to go through today, the end game being the potential adoption of the 2014 CIF calculations. But in between, we want to have a school CIF cost discussion and a little bit of a capacity, the school capacity discussion as well. And we invited Sarah and Sam, thank you Sarah for being here, and Sam, thank you for putting up with us.
My problem. I'm right privileged, I should say.
Sorry. You're probably looking forward to getting back in the saddle, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, really.
Yeah, I'm concerned about your pent-up comments.
He's going to buy school property all over the place. Yeah. Just to summarize, and then we'll throw it out for, I guess, Sarah, whoever to present. As you recall, a few weeks ago, our CIF calculations were quite high. And one of the reasons for that was, one of the main reasons for that was the school projections that we had in as our assumptions. So we went back to the schools and we got their numbers, and in our meeting last week, if you recall, we reran the CIFs based upon what the schools had told us, and the numbers came down significantly. And Michael, you weren't here because I think you would have high-fived everybody. But the fact was they actually came down below the current CIF calculations from that were last approved in 2009. So I think our task here today is to reaffirm the school's calculations. But if you went through your packet, there is about, and I'll use a round number, about a 4,800 student gap. And I think what this school, what this committee has to affirm or decide today is the schools, what they have told us last week, and we want to reaffirm that, is 5 more schools beyond the CIP, and they're all elementary schools. We want to, number one, affirm that, and number two, and again, it's beyond the current CIP, beyond 2020, because everything, those are already tabled in one respect. The other thing I think we have to think about is we make the assumption in this committee that everything is based upon current zoning. And Ben, you and I talked about this the other day. As a matter of fact, why don't you paraphrase what we talked about?
Historically, the CIF has been based on basically an average cost methodology. We were in such a
you know, throughout our, you know, my entire professional career here, and Julie's as well, you know, and most of your professional lives, we've been faced with ongoing development, tremendous development potential, and no clear end in sight as to how great the eventual residential development of the county was going to be. What we have seen, obviously, and you've been part of it over the last couple of years, is that we are approaching, we can at least see the horizon of residential build-out. Certainly in the east, and materially, residential build-out in the whole county. At least according to current land use planning. So we were able, as part of this process, I have to say, staff's sticker shock to the original CIF numbers was, you know, as great as it was for you all. And we had extensive discussion, and, you know, I wanted to be the one to break the numbers to Hobie, but they wouldn't let me. $80,000 and just watching, you know.
Might have killed me.
Just so you know, Hobie, when they told me upstairs the first time, I think my words were holy, and you
were so. There was actually a crowd gathered to watch Ralph's reaction. And that made
Holy
sense.
Batman.
Exactly. And that made sense if we were looking at unlimited development potential still in the county. But part of what we did to re-examine all this is, what are we really going to do? You know, and now that we have a kind of an end game for the county in view, we were able to go back through and look at how many more facilities of each type are we really going to build. The schools are just the biggest chunk of it, but the next biggest chunk is Parks and Rec, and Parks and Rec was a huge proportion of the higher number as well. So so part of what Dan and the folks have done over the last 2 months has been to try to get those numbers more realistic. What are we really going to build? Take advantage of the fact that we've got the 6-year CIP and a good handle on that, and that we have the 10-year capital needs document horizon that Dan's working on right now, which will really that'll take us through 2030. That'll be your next task, and that'll largely complete the public building cycle in Loudoun County. But again, with the caveat that's if everything that happens, development that happens from now on, is within the general plan parameters. If there are plan busting rezonings that take place, these numbers are not accurate. These numbers are not appropriate at that point, because we're really assuming we really only have to build, you know, whatever the number is, 17 or 18 high schools in the county. If we do open up, and there have been rezonings submitted in the last year that wanted to add 5,000 units. Now, they were multifamily, but still 5,000 units in different parts of the county that were not currently zoned or planned. If those happen, then that requires going back and re-examining all of these.
Well, that would be my point, because you have to, that many things takes time to absorb, get in the market. There may be other factors on the front end that may offset that, but you have to really do it and understand it.
I just have to tell you that from the staff perspective, we are comfortable doing this, because we see the same numbers that you guys do at this point, and it doesn't make any sense to ask for stuff that doesn't make sense and that isn't defensible. But I will say, if there are plan-busting CFAMs that come forward, or plan-busting rezonings that come forward, we're going to, at that point in time, seek to reinstate the previous regime of CIF numbers. And those numbers would be, especially in some of the more densely populated parts of the east, a much, much higher number, because the scarcity of land is what drove those costs that drove a lot of this.
But would that only apply to that rezoning?
Julie and I and the county attorney have not had a chance to talk about this at all. So I honestly don't know the answer to that yet.
Well, I don't think think it's that rezoning. I think it's that rezoning and all other rezonings that happened
that would go
in
forward
time.
From that time.
I think the point is, in short, is that right now we could not afford to wait another 5 years to update the CIF.
Yeah, that was my next question.
That's the big issue, is that I could see with what we're looking at in the Silver Line Plan Amendment and other things like that, that there may be initiatives that the board takes on in the next year to 2 years.
Correct.
And if we were to keep to the schedule, which says that we should do the CIF every 2 years, we won't have a problem because we can reevaluate that in that context. What I think is in the immediate time frame, however, is that if one of these rezonings does move forward, which one we can, the one that's the largest one that I can think of would be Waterside.
Right.
If that happens within the next 6 to 9 months, then I think you do have an issue.
Yeah.
The question would be, and this is something that we've done in the past, which is, when do you make these suckers effective? You could make the point, and right now that project has technically gone through the Planning Commission. They would be under the current numbers. Now, they are also talking about making some substantial changes to that zoning. So that could...
Correct.
Yeah, that could make some changes that would necessitate perhaps going back to another public hearing, which then you might have to set a different kind of effective date for these new numbers. But I would hate for that to kind of drive the show. I think the point is the county needs to be disciplined in making sure that you do not let this CIF just kind of hang out there 5 years.
I mean, to me, it's a double-edged sword. It can go for you, against you. My view is when they should be effective is the date of your application. Whatever numbers are in effect, the date you come in with your application is probably what it ought to apply, okay? Now, look, and don't sugarcoat this. Why did we wait 5 years to do this?
It's a lot of work.
I know it's a lot of work, but this board took it on kind of when we came into office. That's when we started this process.
Yeah,
did the last board not want to go? I mean, why did we wait 5 years?
I hate to jump in there, but the reality was you created a whole new department with a transportation priority. It just happens to be that's the staff who supports this process.
Right.
So your other priority parts of your work plan slowed down the CIF process. I mean, so I'll be candid.
Well, I think I think I mentioned last night, there's a plan amendment pending since 2005 that relates to proper policies and these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So in a way, it just was not given the same priority, kind of going to Paul's point. And we did things, it wasn't that the board wasn't aware of it, and it is in your discretion. These are guidelines. So when you negotiate proffers, you can ask for more. You don't have to.
Yeah, of course you can, but these are the numbers used. These are the numbers used for credits and things like that.
Exactly. I mean,
there are two aspects to it.
One other piece, but I'm on the 5 year and so forth, and that is timing.
Yeah.
Because let's just say we put these numbers into effect. Okay? And then let's say we approve Waterside. Waterside is what's going to cause us to have to do some other schools.
Yep.
Potentially.
Yet, they're going to pay either at the current numbers or these numbers, assuming they're approved. They're not going to pay at the numbers of where they're really going to cost us from a capital standpoint.
Yes and no. It depends on, again, what the school generation. I mean, Waterside also is a project that is not going to have single-family detached housing in it. So it really becomes a question of, and we talked about this with schools relative to what kind of thinking ahead as to what other schools would be needed. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, and you too, Sam, is that we really probably will need another elementary school. That was the conclusion if Waterside were to be approved.
Right.
So, I mean, we can directly relate that to that application and not have to change the whole numbers to deal with that potentially. But I think the other, good thing about the old numbers is that they were pretty forward thinking in terms of, and probably they weren't so bad for this long period of time because of the status of where we were in the development process. So, while I agree that, it was probably not the best thing to have waited that long, it really didn't do a whole lot of damage because it really was based on that longer
time. But it could cause damage going forward based on these numbers.
Right.
Correct.
Now, that's your point.
The other thing about, to reiterate on the history thing, that part of it is that, it's largely Dan and his, Dan and one other person doing this. So they've got other stuff. It's a pretty big CIP. We basically added a third portion of the CIP, pretty much of equal size in terms of transportation that we'd never done before.
Right.
We were able to do that without tremendous negative impact to this process because coincident with that, we had the downturn. Nobody was showing up.
We had no residents
with rezonings.
Right.
I mean, there really wasn't any demand pressure for us to do that.
That's the other thing that happened in that time frame was we implemented Oracle. It was me and Julie who had to implement it and do the CIP. So having this on top of that, it just wasn't feasible.
Okay.
The only thing, if I could add something to the conversation, is that, you know, Ben had mentioned, you know, plan-busting rezonings, and I guess another thing that I think the group really needs to consider is not necessarily the plan-busting zonings, but something that I would term, it's more akin to mission creep. And I think what we tend to see right now, there are a lot of rezonings out there, and they don't have a lot of units. I mean, we've been monitoring like the Lim property that has 80 units. Everybody's familiar with the Brambleton land base 1, 3, and 5.
Right.
But as we're looking at that, if those rezonings are approved, that could kick us up into a need for another elementary school in the Dulles North area. And there's a lot of unknown out there. I mean, we know, for example, that there are large landowners in the transition area. One we're very familiar with owns at least 1,000 acres. And ultimately, that's going to be developed. And that 1,000 acres at TR3 could add, at the current level, around 333 units to the mix. If it were to be rezoned into some kind of urban or higher density, that would make, you know, it's even more difficult, not only for schools, but I would imagine for county staff in trying to meet needs. So I think these are things that we see that, you know, really aren't on the books yet, and they aren't monitored because they don't have a development application in there. But there are things, I think, that are important in considering what can potentially happen as we look at the future up through 2030.
Well, as long as, and that comes back to Julie's point, as long as we're doing this every 2 years or so, then we'll be okay with these rezonings because those kind of take longer than that to go through anyhow. So,
Ms. Chairman, can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
It's been 35 minutes, and we should get into the meat of this. And we can talk about hypothetical things, but this is the point in time.
Well, I understand that, but I wanted to put it in context of what we're approving what can happen.
No, and I agree. And when you have impacts from other land use applications, you'll have, I mean, it's a voluntary process. I know it's sometimes more voluntary than others, but it's a process you have to go through and evaluate it at that time on that impact of that particular application. But
agreed.
I think, all right, what I want to do.
Can I just have 2 minutes?
All right, then. Dan, after you, we are going to hear what the schools.
That's right. The most important thing for me, I think, being on this committee for as long as I've been on the committee, is sort of going from the per capita standards that we did to, I always call it the county of build out. Julie wants to throw things at me. But I think what we're seeing is the plan, if you stay true to the plan, the facilities are getting there and the numbers are coming down. And I think that what we have to think about in the future is this committee separating units that are coming in under the plan and what their impact is, and plan busters and how to deal with those. And I see it as two different numbers.
Yeah,
I see it as, if you're zoning up inside the plan, here's your number. If you're busting comp plan, somehow or another, there's a different analysis that you have to do on that to come up with what is that true impact.
Well, the only thing is that if you're a plan buster, you actually do have to, because remember the presentation I gave you was that your proffer's above the base density. So if you are a plan buster, there is no base. You got to pay the whole freight.
Right.
So that's one thing. You're right, though, in the sense that what is the bigger cost to the county? But say the Board of Supervisors in 4 years decides that they want to open up the transition area. Well, we're going to have to do a fiscal analysis. We're going to have to identify what does that cost? What's that going to cost the county in terms of adding additional facilities? And what is that going to have? What are we going to ask development to pay for? I hear what Sam is saying, and I think it's the nickel and diming, these little infill projects that might be, in and of themselves are not going to be any one school or whatever. They're just going to kind of eventually add up to something. That's one thing. But the notion of the zoning in the transition area, if that 1,000 acres develops at its by right density of TR3, that's in the numbers.
Yeah, right.
That's in the numbers now.
Agreed.
So we've got that covered. It's just that they need to
go on. No, just, I just want one quick comment on cost. We can't do things like we've been doing. We mentioned that at an earlier meeting. Because the numbers, we're not debating the numbers tonight on construction costs. I still have an issue with that, but we're talking about other things. Because I think we can't afford to pay how the county. And I understand there's a process you guys have, but somehow we got to come up with some other kinds of solutions or policies that may be able to mix.
Well, I think that's a separate discussion.
No, I understand, but it's
part
of
our. It's a discussion we can have outside of the committee as well.
Yeah, that's my suggestion. At some point in time that we get into that, we're not. Today's about other factors, but I think it's broader things.
You know, we have a long darn history with the bids and where they're coming in. And I mean, that is a competitive side of it. And the only place we've really been under significantly has been some of the road projects.
Well, or
everything
some other
coming in around estimates.
There may be some other process where you can do PPEAs, PPTAs, or something that you can interface.
That doesn't go very far. Really
well, it's too bad because I think it's got a lot of success in some other areas.
But, I mean, we're trying it on a few things, but you don't build schools that way. You know.
Fairfax County did it once with Lorton.
I'll sell naming rights to a school all day long. But
I tried to do that with a highway once when we were on the CTB.
Well, we've done two PPEAs in my time here, and they both cost more than if we had done it ourselves. That's all I can say.
Okay. Sarah, come up and join us.
And time-wise.
Please, join the table. All right, guys. Let's get focused.
What's doing? Was it solicitor?
It's Sam.
Solicitor?
Yeah. Both. You want us to go forward with our session and where our numbers came from?
Originally, with our earlier numbers, and remember, we're talking 2021 to 2030, we had included placeholders for middle schools and high schools. This is beyond the CIP.
Understood.
And we went,
I had to think of what schools with Dan on, that was the schools that was in this plan that was beyond, I thought, the time element. It was like 2027, LES 36.
It was anything beyond 2020.
Okay.
It's anything beyond the current, CIP, okay, that we thought we needed, out to 2030. And we as a committee asked the school, please go back and verify this because we want to get it right.
Okay.
And what the schools have come back with is five new schools, ES-23, ES-31, ES-34, ES-36, and the new Luckett's Elementary School, which I guess doesn't get a number. And what it is now showing from 2021 to 2030 is five schools, all elementary schools.
Okay, so it's 2020.
And what I want to get a sense of, and there's some things in this chart that I don't think like touches when we're funding some of these and so forth, but let's not worry about that. What I want to get a sense from the schools is, are you comfortable with five elementary schools, no middle, no high schools, and kind of your logic behind that?
Basically, I mean, what we did is we went through and we have a pretty substantive database, and we've been building on this thing since 2000. And, you know, we update this, you know, every month, and so we have a real good idea as to, you know, what building permits are being pulled, where they're at, and what planning area that it impacts our need. And as we begin to look at it, I mean, quite frankly, you know, the two areas of remaining development are really in the county's Dulles area. We called forces that in and around Brambleton and the Rockridge cluster. That's Dulles North for us. But again, those are the two epicenters of growth and development that's left in the county that we've been monitoring as far as the applications and what's pending. And we even keep track of those that have been denied in case they ever come back. And so as we did the analysis, the major facilities that we need in the Dulles area have already been programmed. That would include the MS-9, right. MS-7, HS-9, and HS-11. At this point in time, based on everything that we know about the Dulles area, we don't foresee any large secondary facilities coming in the picture for us up through 2030. And so again, you know, as we were looking at it, I mean, we already have a Crawford school site that's part of Arcola Center. And and we have the ES-27 site, which is part of the Brambleton proper.
Right.
We have John Kemp. So again, you know, we think that these numbers are good. We did leave an undesignated facility in there simply because I think that some of the things that we aren't sure about that may appear. And I think Julie's example of Waterside really hits the nail on the head, because that was one of the things that we're uncertain about. I mean, if that were to be approved, that certainly would give us the need for a school. We've also held that in abeyance just based on some of the potential in and along the Metro Rail corridor. If we get some activity there, that might push us to the point where we would need an undesignated elementary school, maybe in that particular location. And again, Luckett's has always been there. Originally, as we were monitoring that Route 15 North corridor, we were looking at, and we have moved a significant portion of students that used to attend Luckett's into Leesburg. And, you know, one of the relief valves would be to move those students back to Luckett's and then also use a larger, newer facility there to help provide enrollment relief to portions of the Waterford or even the Lovettsville attendance area. So we've maintained that facility just for that particular reason. Again, if things don't change markedly there, we might not see a new Luckett's Elementary School come out of the ground. But as far as the other schools, again, primarily located in the Dulles area, we feel very good about these numbers, and with the caveat that if there are substantive rezoning or changes in the general plan, that these numbers will certainly be adjusted accordingly. But again, based on everything that we know about and that we're familiar with, we feel good about these numbers.
Okay, and just to summarize, right now in the CIP, Knott County Riverside High School, there are two middle schools and two high schools designated in the CIP right now, mostly for Dulles North area, correct?
Yes, sir.
Because if you go by the article in the newspaper today, where you underestimated, was in that area basically, you underestimated Rockridge and Creighton, I think it was. It was a nice article about this in the paper today. And it also showed where you overestimated too. I mean, it's not perfect, but you're good. You're very close overall. But it's showing that we had more new students in the Dulles North area than we estimated this year.
That was probably the locus of our overage. Everywhere else, you know, we were pretty good.
Right. I agree. Sarah, do you want to add to this? No? Okay. Hold on.
ES-23. That's fiscal year 2017. This is supposed to be, I guess, for 2021, 2030. I think that's the time element. But the one that's, you got 2015, I guess ES-27, ES-28 are accounted for already. Mm-hmm. But ES-23 is not.
Yeah.
And then it says Arcola Center proper. Is that a dedicated piece of property that's coming in line?
Yes, it is. It has been.
So my question to that is, do you get full value for that if you own the land or get the land, I guess, for zero from a proffer? Should it be included in the calculation of the cost of the facility?
I think it's a bigger question. I think you have five schools, right? In the, you have five schools in these numbers. Mm-hmm. You have land for three of them?
We have land for...
Right.
Three.
We have the land for our COLA center. ES-27 is located in Brambleton. We have that. And when we assembled the property for the John Champ High School, we have enough land there for an additional elementary school.
Okay, then I'm on Hobie's train. Why is the land component in those schools for those planning areas that they're in, if you already have it?
We actually have land for two. ES-27 and ES-28, I believe, are part of the CIP.
I mean, if we don't have the land, I get the land should be there. But
yeah,
if the land's proffered, that land component should come out of this number right here.
Sam, do we actually have the Brambleton land, or is that part of one of the applications?
It is a proffered site that is currently in the very last phase of the Brambleton development. If their rezoning proposal is successful, that elementary school site, which is shown as ES-27, will be relocated, and then we'll be able to develop it. But that was part of, I think, your original 1996 application. I think Billy might remember that more accurately than I.
So if they're successful with the rezoning, it accelerates the site.
Cool.
Okay. That's all it does. They've already proffered that years ago.
But that's already been programmed anyway, so it's not even in our numbers.
That's what I'm saying. Now, aren't these taken out?
Yeah, they're already
no.
ES-23 is not.
27 and 28 are out.
No, because Brambleton is already taken.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Assuming that it already.
Yeah.
No, but Hobie's talking about
ES-23.
The other five. 23, 31, 34, 36, and Luckett's. Out of those five, how many do we have school sites for?
The memo said three.
When I say have them, I mean in hand. No. We closed on the property. It's our property.
Or it's committed that you're going to get it. Date certain.
Well, of the five that are there, we have our COLA center in hand, and we already own Luckett. So essentially, we're talking about land for ES-31, ES-34, and a potential undesignated school.
Right. So we have land for
three,
two.
So two.
We have land for two.
Three.
And we need land for three.
What's the third one, Sam?
You would be looking at land that needs to be acquired for ES-31.
Right.
ES-34. And the undesignated elementary school.
All right, so we need land for three of them.
Right.
So we have land for two of them.
Correct.
Okay. So it does come back to a valid question. If we have that land, should it be in the calculation for those two?
Depends on the nature of the property, because those are property as public use sites. Future school boards could decide that they don't want to build a public school on that site. So
this is our catch-22 here.
Okay,
you sell it for what you're charging people for. If you don't,
they don't get sold to be used for something else.
Obviously, the Luckett site is the Luckett site.
Right.
Yeah.
You can take that out. But the other one, you know, are you sure you're really going to use that site? And that's what, you know, you have to remember, especially if it's old proffers, some of those sites.
Well, if you don't need the site, you don't need the school.
Sometimes there are old proffers where the site was.
Well, then the site's used for something else to offset some other capital costs.
But there's another issue. For the Ashburn and the Dulles calculations, we're only charging for one elementary school. We're not charging for five, okay? Because you can only charge on a per unit basis, so you're offsetting the cost of. A housing development would necessitate three elementary schools unless it was absolutely enormous. So we're only charging for one elementary school because
there are still two more in the Dulles area that could go in Ashburn or Dulles.
So what he's saying, Hobie, is like that if there's three schools that need to go into Dulles or Dulles, they're not going to put three schools in the CIF. They're only going to do one because they can't charge.
It doesn't matter to me if the ones you need property for, you put in the east with the highest number. Okay, I can get there too. My problem is you put land numbers in for schools that you have land for. And I hear Paul, you might use it for something else. But that's a different decision than having new units pay you for more land to acquire when you have it.
We have already prorated down the land costs in the east,
from what our current market is.
So then, so the question is a prorated number. That's all.
So the question is, do you want to? There are potentially four more elementary schools in the east. You know, the question is, there are potentially four more elementary schools in the east. Let's see what it's out. One of which we may have a proper site for. Okay. The question is, are you asking them to lower the land portion of the CIF for those two pieces by 25%?
No, I would ask you to take it out. Take out the land portion.
No, you'd only take out 25% of it. You've got four schools of which only one potentially have land. So,
and where's the school that you potentially have land?
Arcola Center.
But we're only doing a per capita cost for one elementary school in the formula. Right. We're not taking the three sites they need and multiplying that per capita cost times three, and that's somewhere.
The most you would do is, what I'm arguing is, the most you would do is prorate it down by a quarter, because a quarter, potentially, again, this is all based on the total number of these we're going to need divided by the number of facilities. So,
well, that number's, what is it?
Here's where you don't have
$10 million.
If a number's in the CIP, you don't put it in here.
Right.
If a piece of land is already acquired for a piece that's outside the CIP, you should take it out.
It's okay. Think of the CIF at this point.
So you put it in.
$600,000.
Whoa!
Let me try this again. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
One discussion.
Let me try this again. Your elementary school component of your CIF right now is based on however many more elementary schools we need. All right? No. Probably only four, because Luckett's is in the west. So let's leave that one out. Okay? Because we've already got that's a separate land bay. We've got a separate set of numbers for that. We're not doing any rezonings in the west anyway. That really doesn't matter. So it's four. Right? Between Dulles South and Ashburn and et cetera, but probably the Ashburn area. You got four. So three, the question is, you're going to need three quarters of the land for, and you need at least three quarters of the land for the future elementary schools.
Agreed.
Right? So the question is, how sure of you are you of the other fourth? If you're sure of the other fourth, that one site is real, and we will use it, then you could prorate down the land cost portion by a quarter.
Agreed.
Yeah.
100%.
He's right.
You understand what I'm saying?
I absolutely agree.
He's right. Yeah.
It's the same as taking one out.
Let's look at the big picture.
I absolutely agree with what you said.
What is a quarter of the land costs $12 million.
$12,800,000. $630,000 an acre times 20, right?
Yeah.
That's the reduced value.
School site, elementary school site, is what, 35?
28.
So if we're doing it off of the 900, or we're taking another quarter off of the already reduced?
No, I thought you did a reduce at 630 times 20.
So the effect is,
$12,600,000.
I'm trying to figure out if we're
down to about $472,000 an acre.
So the component value then of land for an elementary school is,
how do we go from 900 down to 400?
We had already reduced it to 630.
You reduced it because you may reduce it 30% because the value of buying something over a certain acreage needed to be reduced because you got economies of scale for buying a better piece.
We're certainly hoping that that's true.
That's the assumption. Yeah.
Right, so I guess I'm trying to be simple and you're confusing me. We have schools, costs, and land costs. It seems like if you have the land cost for that area for that school should be zero.
Except there's more than one school.
Either way, you're getting about the same result. The question is,
I understand
if you pull the land
from
that one school and there's four schools, and he says reduced by a quarter.
Across the board.
But it was 900, and then I thought it was 900, and then, but because you got bigger quantities, we reduced it down
to 6:30.
The 6:30.
Per right. And then he's
probably reduces it. Why do you reduce it beyond 6:30? Because you're
he would reduce it because of the, we have a site.
The quarter. One of the
I talked to him about this last week.
That's not what that says.
But you're reducing the site even more. I mean, you can't have keep reducing stuff because it went from 900 to 6:30, and that's what rolls into the model.
Right. For all four of them.
Correct. 6:30 for all four. But you have one of the sites, so you're taking 25%. If here, let me try it another way. Let me try another way. You got four school sites at 20 acres at 6:30. That's what's in the number.
Right.
Whatever that number is.
Right.
So you're taking, by Ben's analogy, 25% of that number off. You're not taking, now you're taking 25% of that number off and then reducing that by another 25%.
What you can do is four times 28 times 6:30 and then take a quarter off that.
Yeah, that's where I was thinking.
Right. What he's saying.
The land costs are
different. I think that's what he did.
I thought that, was it flatline for
the land costs are different for schools for every region that we have.
That's right.
So right now we have one school in each region, five schools, which we've talked about.
Well,
each one of those has a land value associated with based on that region.
The land
value. All Dulles North except the undesignated. We don't
then
know.
We should put four in Dulles North and the land for four in Dulles North at that number. And put the other school just the building cost.
No, he can't do that. So the way this, so the way the CIF works, though, you can't put four schools in just the Dulles CIF. You only put one in there, no matter if you need one school or 100 schools, because one development is only going to pay, only going to use one school.
Right.
So you can't. So you can't put more than one in there.
Right, but that's why you lower it by a quarter.
Right. So you low. So you prorate.
Right. Right. We're all saying the same.
We are.
This is. We had a conversation on how do you figure out if you're paying, like if people.
Can I make a motion?
Not yet.
So, Capretti, you and I had a conversation on how do you know that we're not can't, like that. You know, say we need 10 of something, we've only built 2 of it, and there's 8 to go. How are the rest of the condos not paying for just the 8? The answer to that is that they're only putting the one in there per region of something that's needed.
That's not what happens across the board.
But you're only paying for one at a time.
Schools is unique because there's one in every. If you look at a rec center, there's only 3 of the districts have a rec center. If you look at a community center, none of them do. If you look at a team center, there's only one in the east.
Let's run a scenario.
Because it's one. Yeah.
All right. In the Dulles region. The current CIF number proposed for single-family detached, I'll just pick one, is 38,403. I'll round it, okay? Correct? All right. So if we were to take that 25% off the land value, what happens to that CIF number?
Well, it's really related only to the school, isn't it? The 20,658.
Yeah, but it's all.
Trying to understand if we're talking.
What's the
big is the red box here?
If it's 12 million, with the takeoff 12,600,000, what does that do? Because that's 6:30 times 20.
Dulles for one school. 750 acres, and then we're down. It's 525. So then we're discounting that by 25%.
Yep.
$231,000 on.
393.7.
Right.
How much?
No.
He's just figuring out his acre cost.
It's per acre.
Yeah, per acre. Right. Because you've got to be able to add the school number to the county.
Like it's 6:30. That was a net number.
Yeah, but that's just that's Ashburn.
I got you.
We're running a Dulles.
Dulles.
I'm trying to understand. Is it a bread box, a toaster, a Volkswagen, Army tank? You know, what are we talking about here?
Single family detached, I'm at $37,212.
All right, so we reduced.
And that's reducing the land by the 25%?
We reduced by just $1,200.
Based on the land calculation
just
of that
one
area.
So by reducing the land on this scenario, it dropped us from 38,403 to 37,212, which is a reduction of $1,191 is what it dropped us. Okay?
3%.
So
now, as a committee, not wearing your developer hats, right? As a committee, do you believe we're going to be able to use the site in the front?
Well, if you tell us you're not, we'll put the land in there.
I don't know.
You're the staff that has the property. There's something wrong with property?
The property doesn't meet the acreage standard, and it's going to require a two-story design. And I know the schools are optimistic that they can use the site. But, okay, I'm more in the general government side of the hat, which is there's an election next year. This new school board could say, we're not going to take the risk on a 15-acre site to try to cram this element.
Definitely.
Sam, we are talking about the Arcola Center site, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so I'm just caveating it, and I think it's...
They could also say, listen, we got a site, it's two stories.
Use it.
And use it.
Right.
We can't make the decision based on future boards.
I will tell you, you don't sit in these closed sessions.
I do. And I will tell you that there is a lot of discussion with supervisors having one opinion in the district, with school board members having another opinion, and there is no unanimous views about school sites. It is a difficult thing. And there's not common views. And remember, a lot of these districts, the magisterial districts, are intertwined. A school can have students from three or four magisterial districts. I have a high school in my district where the only students that attend that high school from my district is my neighborhood. They're all in Sean's district and Suzanne's district. That's Broad Run High School, okay? So it's not as simple as saying, well, the school board might do this or that, because it's not unanimous. I will tell you that we have a series of land issues going on in this area. Well, we've argued about it for 3 years now. We still don't have a darn site. The schools have brought one site to us 3 times now, and 3 times the Board of Supervisors has said no, and 3 times the school board has come back and said yes, and we still don't have the site. So it's not that easy. My personal view, I'd leave the number alone. And it also hedges kind of the earlier discussion we had about the way this is only about absolute current zoning, and it gives a little bit of buffer for some of those other things that occur. If we take this down so low that there's no buffer for anything, something is going to give a little bit. If nothing else, we're going to have all these infills and so forth that it's going to compensate for.
I think a bigger conversation is, if you look at your land values, I mean, that's where I'm going next. I mean, there's nowhere you can show me that it's worth $600,000. I mean, you look at the average over the last 5 years.
If you take the chart where your acquisition chart,
the last 2010,
the last five schools that you bought averaged $65,000.
You're putting $600,000?
And we have 750 in the east. It's 14. So I guess I would say to you is pick your poison. Yeah. I'll give you your land number. If you got a land for a facility, take it out.
Guys, yeah. What he's referring to, hang on, Ben. What he's referring to.
Riverside?
Hang on. Please work with the chairman. What he's referring to, because I want everybody on the same sheet of music, is there were some Q&As distributed to you. The last page of the Q&As shows what we paid, goes back to 2002, for acreage for various schools, including price per acre. And it shows both property the schools has purchased, and then at the bottom, property that the BOS has purchased for the schools. And it shows the BOS doesn't do a very good job, is what it shows. So.
Well, nice. 442 is your number for the Lansdowne site. A lot lower than 600 some that we have in there.
And that's the anomaly.
And there was another site that was available but wasn't chosen that was a lot less.
But I think everybody agreed, okay, they played more for Lansdowne.
Yeah,
that doesn't make it the number.
But you got highs and lows.
Well, you could say there was another site. There was zero chance that would have been selected by this board or the last board because nobody was going to take PDOP out of the plan to put a school on it. So there really wasn't another site.
But the averages, I guess my point is, you got averages. You got one that maybe you spent more on that you don't necessarily want to do, and you got some that you got super deals on. But the averages overall, with a high and a low,
the average
still was about $65,000.
Yeah, and I think Michael's point is well taken. If you look at the history, because I was a little surprised when I saw this chart, the history isn't necessarily bearing out the per acreage charges that were.
Well, and to be honest with you, that's market. Your average is market.
I mean.
What we see.
Well, I think, and from a school's perspective,
The 65.
The question that didn't get answered was how many schools have been proffered. So, you know, you're not buying 100 schools' sites have been proffered. You're not buying 100% of your sites. So we're assuming in 100% of your sites you can get me there. You're assuming a high number for land. Forget him. You can get me there. You just can't double it up. Is my issue.
I don't think I would assume that we will see any more proffered school sites beyond what's been applied for now. The trend is down. We're buying the sites.
That's why we have 100% of them. That's why we have them all being bought in
the plan. Well, the good news is, of all these schools that are projected on this plan, you need 5.
That's the great news.
And right. Some of them you already have property for. May not be the ultimate piece, but it won't be the first time that ever happened. And but at least you've got some way of doing it. And frankly, if everybody in the private sector, at least on the land side, got together, they could probably figure out a way to get a school site through various things within the proximity of planning areas so the county could get a site. So they could those site dedications could offset cash contributions. Because that's ultimately, whether it's private or public, it's always about cash.
But that's what we do.
Let me ask this question. Is staff ready to say that if a developer gives a school, and it gives one of these elementary schools, their credit is the land value that you have in hand?
Yeah.
100%. That's what we're going to do. We're not, no appraisals anymore. It's that's the credit.
Oh, no.
No, that is what the, I mean.
Right now we're doing... When we jump to assess value, you said it was assess or a base appraisal.
We do an appraisal.
Okay, what I'm saying to you now is you want to leap these so much higher. If I'm a developer giving you a school site, you should give me $12,600,000 worth of credit against my capital facilities.
No, because this is funny money. You don't get a reverse on it.
Well, I thought it was
for everything else.
It's actual cost of land. We don't know what it is yet. When we get a specific parcel down the road, that's when we get an appraisal and understand the value of a specific parcel.
That's what I'm saying, on specific parcel.
These aren't specific parcels. The only one that's specific is the proffered one in Arcola. Otherwise, they're hypothetical somewhere.
That's right. And all of this is based on a model that has a lot of variances. So I think we should keep the $1,200 in there and move on.
Okay, let's do this as a game plan, okay? What we can do is, I'd like to discuss the student capacity, the school capacity versus student enrollment projections for a minute, okay? Because there is a discrepancy, and that was pointed out, somebody guided me in some of these documents.
That's right.
Okay, yeah, go way back to the second to the last page of the packet. It's called comparison on the top. All right, and what this shows basically is that we have a 4,851 difference in enrollment versus enrollment increase minus capacity increase. I think we need to discuss that number for a minute. Then, at that point, I think we can entertain motions around the CIF. And if somebody wants to make substitute motions, I'll guide you through the motion process. You can make amendments to the motion. You can make substitute motions. And I'll guide you all through what can be done. Okay? Because we have a little difference of opinion here. Not everybody's thinking the same way. So we'll work it. We'll take votes. But before we do that, I think we need to have a discussion about this page, because this drives it to, and what it's telling us is, overall is that our school capacity increases 14,796 seats. But it's also telling us that our enrollment increases by 19,640 students. So your difference of excess students over new capacity is 4,851. So Sam, Sarah, do you want to talk to that? And why?
Sure, I'd be happy
to. Sam, as part of that, why you're still comfortable with the school projections given that discrepancy?
Okay, I'm happy to try to answer your questions on this. I think one of the important things is when you look at where our facility needs are current and what we're projecting through 2030. They are in the growth areas of the county. when you start looking at older, more mature areas in the county, for example, in the Ashburn area that you're extremely familiar with, I mean, those are mature communities and they have been through their boom. And what we're starting to see as those communities age out, we do have surplus space, not only in Ashburn, it's evident in Leesburg, it's evident in Western Loudoun, in the eastern part of the county. However, I think it's also important to understand that simply because we have space, and I'll just make an example, in Eastern Loudoun or in Western Loudoun, that we could take kids from the Dulles area or in and around Brambleton or Rock Ridge and take those kids either up to Ashburn or into Eastern Loudoun or even to Western Loudoun to maximize those seats, because what you get into is a significant operational cost trying to transport those kids all over creation. And then, you know, what you're also looking at is the whole how unpopular it can be. I mean, you know, if you really look at the genesis of Riverside High School, it all started with an attendance zone adjustment, and people in Ashburn Farm said, you expect us to go to school at Briarwood, not only know the text. And so, I mean, that really created the drive for Riverside High School. So, bottom line is, one cannot assume just because there may be seats in another section of the county that they are available for any and all students. Again, it's just not practical to think that we'd be shipping kids maybe from, you know, Brambleton community to, say, Banneker or even up to Sanders Corner for that matter.
But you're comfortable, Sam, with the, that even with this difference between the two sets of forecasts, that the facilities we have still give us enough flexibility?
Yes, I do.
I mean, basically, you know, the analysis, Beth worked on this with Sam and his folks. And, you know, when I look at this, I show us, you know, I look at this, and at the end of the day, there's about a cluster.
Yeah, I was just doing that analysis right now. It's about a cluster of schools.
Right. And, you know, if that's within everybody's comfort zone and a margin of error at this point, you know, so be it.
And that's, but that's also assuming one other factor, too, is that, and this was part of that, is that there's no overall decline in enrollment in the current schools. So all the current schools are going to be full.
And that the MFAs will fill up the way, you know, at standard MFA rates rather than at hopefully lower.
I think hopefully what you have to look at is that, you know, as we continue to grow, for example, in and around Brambleton, there is no excess capacity, and there won't be any until new facilities are constructed. And again, what you get into is, granted, we might have space at Sanders Corner, Dominion Trail for students, but it's
Those are more mature communities,
and they'll
be redeveloped as something different, right? Yeah, I mean, you're right. As I'll call it, the suburban centers become
older
and they become redeveloped. The demographics of that whole community change a lot. I mean, you see it in Leesburg. So in some other areas right now, you might see it in other areas that have the same thing. But
I mean, I will just say from our perspective, from the perspective of Beth and I, this did not overly disturb us. I mean, it's you know, if it was much more than this, this would cause me some heartburn.
But I mean, that's a lot of kids. It's one cohort of school, high school, middle school, elementary, two elementary schools from a capacity.
Well, that's not close. You know, $250 million.
But when you view that over 90-some schools,
right,
where it spreads, then it's a little different picture.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Right, right.
That, you know, it's a big number, but I think in the margin of errors, I don't have. I'd rather get into some of the areas where we know we got this and make those adjustments.
But it is $250 million worth of projects.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Question?
Dr. Damo, on the new students, which are divided into three groups by a year range, are we saying that because it's kind of front-loaded in the 2016-2020 versus the 2026-2030, does that lead to your confidence that this is not to be all that concerning?
Well, I think basically what we're seeing is, again, I'm not sure I heard all of your question. I'm hoping I'm answering it. But again, we have, over the past decade or so, had a tremendous amount of growth, and we're seeing it becoming more concentrated in the Dulles area. And so it's a lot easier for us to focus on, and I think we're tied down, have those numbers fairly, you know, they're accurate. And yeah, we do feel good about those projections. And what happens with newer communities is that what we tend to do is we see traditionally, and that really hasn't changed, younger families with children moving in. And so, for example, if we were to look at a profile of the Rock Ridge attendance zone, what we would see is about 53% of that attendance zone is composed of elementary students. If you would look at other areas in the county that are older and more mature, what we tend to see is that about 49% of our students are elementary. So as they age, I mean, that we are going to shift a little bit. But again, I mean, that these ranges are pretty accurate.
And there's stuff going on in the, you know, and there's stuff going on in the background, you know, Sam's models in the cohort survival stuff, where he is showing some trends flattening out over time. So, you know, right, if those do continue, it, which kind of mimics nationally those trends.
Hey, Sam, it's Hobie. Of the 4,900, by the way, you sound great. You may feel like crap, but you sound great. The 4,900 difference, is it most likely to happen probably in the program stuff that we're not accounting for? I know we got these five or six elementary schools. Probably that difference is not coming out of that. Is it more likely to be evaluated and find, and you might find that in these other things that you need, you get two middle, two high schools, and there's some other things. Is that where the margin of error may occur, or is it?
I think it really has a lot to do with a lot of the land that's still out there that's not developed and we don't have applications on. I mean, again, just look at the transition area. We have several large landowners down there, and, you know, right now by our calculations, there's around 1,300 to 1,400 acres that's potentially available for development. And if that were to develop it by right, it's one potential option. However, if it were to be rezoned, I mean, that could create a whole need for a cluster. I mean, it would require another middle school, another high school, and, you know, two or three more elementary.
But I guess
if it's different than the current comp plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But you got
keep saying that.
But Mike, on your school generations,
I said that.
On your school generation numbers, and how the county's calculated versus what the school sees, you've got, frankly, almost a cluster margin right there.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I mean, I don't know how else you can.
I think if Sam's comfortable,
I guess as we're looking at this, you know, quite frankly, I mean, several things have really, you know, colored our projections over the last several years. One, it's been the economic difficulties that we've had. I mean, it's been, if you look at birth rates, we've had the largest plunge in birth rates nationally since the Great Depression. And, you know, last year, they started to flatten out, but we aren't seeing a recovery. And we've also got some other issues at play here. If you look at the millennials who right now are really entering their prime childbearing years, but we aren't starting to see an uptick in births, which will eventually feed our schools, in part because it's the number of people that are coming out of school with increasing debt, family structures changing a lot. And what you tend to see, or at least what we're seeing, is that women are tending to delay childbearing. And the longer that delay, ultimately, create smaller numbers of kids. And so those are some of the things that are being factored into our projections as we're looking at them. And, you know, that might contribute to some of the discrepancies that we currently have with the county staff.
And I think the other thing is, if you look at, there's 3,400 kids ascribed to the multifamilies, okay, over this time period. If a significant chunk of that multifamily is likely to be the elevator style units, we have not yet, we have not yet reduced that pupil generation number. If, as we suspect, those come in lower, then that takes some of that pressure away.
Right.
I mean, it is not impossible from some of the stuff Julie and I have looked at in the past that the pupil generation number in those could be half the amount that we have in a standard multifamily. I believe it when I see it because it is still Loudoun County and people do seem.
Well,
we are victims of our own success.
Yeah, and I would like to add to Ben's comment is, what we're starting to see is housing prices have escalated and incomes are actually really frozen and have actually purchasing power has declined. What we're starting to see is our student generation numbers are going up in our multifamily in our towns, and it's simply an affordability issue. So
yeah.
Those numbers are creeping up, they're not going down. Where we are starting to see some declines, it's in single family detached.
I think if we did this every 10 years, I'd be worried about this.
I think a big impetus of your multifamily inventory coming in the future is along the Dulles toll road.
Right.
It's a different product. It hits a different,
it is different
demographics. You'll probably get your, I'll term the millennium person to move in there. In fact, I was at a conference today, we were talking about that. The millennium. The definition of the millennium person,
millennial.
They want to be in an urban area, and doesn't have that right now. But it's
the 5,000 garden style apartments.
Until they have kids, do not figure it out.
But then we have capacity.
Then we have capacity.
Right. So,
okay. It sounds like everybody. Not everybody, but there seems to be a relative consensus that there's not a sense of overall concern or urgency around this difference between capacity and anticipated enrollments. That why it's a notable number, it's not something that's not manageable.
No.
Okay. All right. With that, what we could do, it's about 6:30, is somebody wants to, I'll entertain motion, and then if people want to pick on the motion.
Point of info first.
Yes.
Are we voting on each CIF individually or
no.
All? Okay.
We'll vote on, for example, somebody could make an initial motion to say, we vote that the fiscal impact committee approve the capital intensity factors presented in the October 16, 2014. Fiscal Impact Committee packet. So what that motion would do is start you at the baseline numbers that are in here. And then there can be amendments made to that motion, there can be substitute motions made, but that would give you a baseline of what's in here as an example.
My question is, when it leaves here and goes to the Fiscal Impact Committee?
No, it goes to the Finance Committee.
What is the purpose of that? What does the Finance Committee do with it?
Whatever we want to do.
They discuss it and they get adopted.
We can do whatever we want to do. They can triple it.
Does it always go to the?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It has to be approved by the board.
Yeah. I know it has to be approved by the board. Does it have to go to the Finance Committee?
Yeah. That's the way it's done.
Okay.
They could change it. They could adopt it as is. They could.
Yeah, we could say we're going to accept the recommendation of the Fiscal Impact Committee and we're done.
Well, they got to have some justification of why they changed it.
The candid implication here, interesting thing is, it's always kind of been accepted because the numbers have always been going up and everybody cut. This is going to be a case where the numbers have gone down and Finance Committee is going to be interesting and the board's going to be interesting.
You should be aware that in my public comment period last night's board meeting, I did talk about this. And I talked about how our initial cut, the numbers were in the stratosphere. And now that we've refined some numbers, we're actually below the 09 numbers. But we have one more meeting where we're going to work through it again.
and then I'm going to take it to finance. And I brought that discussion up last night. Can we change it? Yes. I mean, one of the things I did when I got to the full board on our needs is I took out the equestrian center, and I just stuck that in my motion, and it was taken out. Okay, so yeah. I mean, ultimately, the board makes the decision, but I would like to have it such that the board adopts as close as possible to what the FIC recommends. I mean, that's my preferable world, is that we adopt what comes out of here.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make a motion.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we adopt these published bike planning area recommendations with a modification. And the modification is that based upon the school land availability, that we reduce the Dulles area by 25% land value only. And
okay.
That be reflected in the number.
There's a motion on the table. So do I understand the motion? Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right, motion by Hobie, seconded by...
That's for the only enchilada.
Ready.
Point of order. Or point of info, or one of the
clarification.
Two. Sorry, clarification. Would it be easier to divide the question?
This.
Let's get through.
Hang on.
Everything.
Here's the thing. The way the Board of Supervisors rules of orders work, and this way I'm running this meeting, is that if one member asks to divide the question is divided automatically.
Okay.
So
I'm okay
now.
With that.
Now, so
I haven't asked for it. I'm asking if it would be easier to do it.
It's not easier. It's whether you want to do it or not. If you want to divide the motion, you have a right to ask, and it only takes one of you to ask. Now, if you divide the question, what that means, if you're not familiar with this, is...
The result will be the same, or maybe not.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, it's true.
If you divide the question, it means we will take two votes. The first vote would be on approving the numbers as presented in here. The second vote would be on whether or not you reduce the school land by 25% in the Dulles area, to paraphrase your motion, okay? So if you want those voted on separately, then one of you needs to make a motion to divide, or make a request to divide the motion. It does not require a second.
Okay, that wasn't the way I was. We can't divide to the five CIFs.
You want to vote,
you want to vote on them separately?
You'd have to make a substitute.
You would have to make a substitute motion to do that, and there would have to be a second.
Okay.
That is not an amended motion because it's not germane to the original motion on the table.
Okay.
That would have to be a substitute motion to do it.
Okay. That's, thank you. I'm good.
Okay, so I got a motion on the floor.
All right, you get the opening. You get the opening.
We had a second?
I seconded it.
Michael seconded it.
For my purposes, I mean, I could debate many more things. I could debate construction costs. I could debate other factors. The only thing that had made a difference is how we published and look at a lot of the facilities that were programmed. I do understand that. I do think that there's other ways to help solve some of the cost, both private sector and public sector, because it's always about cash. And we'll have to figure out ways. I hear what you say about PPEAs and TAs. I don't know how focused, but I know for me, and having built a lot of things over a period of time, there are ways to save money. And if we can somehow have private sector and public sector figure out a way to save taxpayer monies, not only on the construction side, but even on the operations side, that we should explore those avenues. But with that motion, with that tweak, I support this. I can debate this to death. But we need to move on because I think it's important that we go with these numbers.
Okay.
And I think that's with that one adjustment.
Okay. Other discussion on the motion. And everybody gets one chance to discuss the motion. Please be reasonable with time. And if you want to divide the motion, do it when you speak. So who else? Anybody?
Mike?
Yeah, I guess I seconded the motion so we could have some discussion. There's a couple areas that I just want to talk about to make sure that we all are on the same page with. One is there's some land values in here for community centers and rec centers. It's the same for every single region that we have through the county. And yep, that right, doesn't feel right to me. I don't know why a park in the west or a rec center in the west gets charged the same per acre as a site in the east, and I really think that those numbers are out of whack a little bit. The second point that I want to make is we went through this exercise with trails, and we got a standard in here for trails. And when you start applying that standard, what I heard the trails folks say is the trails weren't going to cost anything. They were going to maintain them. There wasn't a lot going on there. But when you look at the land component, especially in the east where it's $750,000 an acre, the land component of the trail standard is crazy. And the idea that Mark threw out that he wanted that in there so that he'd give developers credit for donating trail land, $750,000 an acre in the east is crazy to me to give as a credit, okay? So I think that the land numbers, if it were me, if I could make a substitute to Hobie's, I would change the regional park and the rec center numbers to where they are across the board and not have them all for the east. And I would take out any land that has to do with
that's trails. Not a valid substitute motion.
Okay, then.
Okay?
Okay.
And it's not valid because the original, it doesn't adopt
I understand
capital intensity factors, which is the purpose of the main motion. Okay?
Well,
now, I will say that was brought up a couple meetings back where we use the countywide standard for a few things like rec facilities and so forth, and that would have been the time to bring that up.
I wasn't here for that.
Oh, yeah, but okay. I think that, if I can get
go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest trouble I had with it was the land cost. I can get to the land cost, but I did have problems with this whole trail thing because I feel like we were misled, because that meeting was, I think I bought into the whole trail thing only because we were made to believe that there wouldn't be any cost to that land. Only the maintenance cost and all that. And to see all this dollars in here for land for trails kind of threw me back too. I was shocked by that.
Other discussion? Chris?
Real quick, I have 3 points. And I will not be supporting the decrease of 25%.
Chris, you only can support the whole motion or nothing unless you divide the motion.
All right, I'll hold my discussion then.
Well, this is your chance to divide the motion.
Just divide the motion. And if you want to support one and not the other, all you got to do is say divide the motion.
All right, I'd like to divide the motion.
Okay, the motion's divided. Now you can do what you said. Okay.
Okay.
No, go ahead, make it.
All right, I got 3 points here. One, we have the consensus of the administration of the school, and we also have the consensus of the professional staff. I think we should be considering putting a lot of weight on that. Number two, we've taken a significant bite of the elephant here. We've reduced the fiscal impacts. Number three is next year's a practical reality that we have elections and we could have a difference in opinion or direction that can completely throw this out. Why don't we take one step at a time? We do this, we do the numbers as they are this time, and in 2 years, after we have a new board, hopefully they're all reelected, but we have a new board, a new school board, we can actually make the changes based on that reality.
Is it election next year?
Too fair. I know. We'll let you know how it works out for you.
Thank you.
So as far as, I think I'll speak on the dropping the dullest one down by like $1,200. I think we should keep it in there. We don't know. You'd have to make an argument that you know which school is going to be in the CIF or not. Like, I mean, the schools don't have names. Is ES31 the school that's in that CIF right now, or is there ES34 that has the land for it? So I think keeping it in there right now is logical.
I'm glad he divided the question, because I think we should go ahead and approve or vote on what the staff and the professionals have provided to us, and then discuss variances after that. So.
Okay.
Disappointing clarification.
Hang on. Okay. You get a closing because you made the motion.
Okay, thanks.
So, Fred?
I just want to say that whatever way we vote, I hope that we stay true to this every 2 years and not wait 5 years.
Yeah. We will do the best we can. We are limited by
based on that assumption.
We will do the best we can based on the resources that we have.
Okay, anybody else before Hobie?
Can I just point of order?
Go ahead.
We have one more meeting scheduled. So the idea that we have to vote on a number today doesn't mean we can't ask staff to recalculate something for another
There's
meeting.
No more meeting.
Well, plus we have, don't we have Supervisor Williams' thing to deal with that we haven't made a motion or dealt with yet?
I've already had that discussion with Julie, and given that the intent has always been to have that meeting optional, and I explained last meeting that I was trying to wrap it tonight, and that meeting truly was optional, what I've instructed Julie to do is bring it straight to the Finance Committee. Okay, and she and I had that discussion last week,
a couple
days ago, whatever the heck it was. We're going to have so much fun. And frankly, what I've asked her to bring, Michael, is the same way we have single family detached, attached, multifamily, and stacked, and all that. But bring us that spectrum, and just give those the recommendations of that whole spectrum, from just age restricted down to full assisted living, to whatever else there is. Oh, you're closing. Anybody else?
I just have a question. I want to just clarify that we are voting on Hobie's motion that would adopt the CIF with the exception being the reduction in the land cost
no.
in the Dulles area. Is that
no.
correct?
No. You will be taking two votes because Chris divided the motion. The first vote will be to approve the capital intensity factors as they are presented in the October 16, 2014 FIC packet. The second vote, which is a standalone vote, will be whether or not to reduce the school land numbers for those five elementaries, or four, I think it was four, by 25%. So there will be two separate votes because the motion was divided.
Question.
Okay, thank you.
If clarity. My motion was for the reduced number. So the question is, if you pass the first motion, which was not my motion, I know it was broken out, then there isn't a second vote.
Yeah, I think you should vote the other way.
I think the vote is the other direction.
The vote should be...
Or does his...
If we approve
it. Yeah, I'll vote it. I'll do it in the other direction.
Does one amend the other?
No, you can't amend his motion.
The second one essentially
amends the first one. Right. You can probably do it either way, but what I'll do is I'll reverse them, and we'll take up the 25% first, and then we'll take up the CIFs in the packet. Okay?
Okay.
Hobie, you get a closing.
Thank you. I've been on this committee for 22 years, maybe, Ben. I know Ben was the consultant. I think I'm the only original member. Ben Graham, myself, Peggy Mayo.
You don't look 22.
I know. I wish I was 22. In fact, Buddy Fletcher was on it, too.
Right.
Buddy Fletcher was before Sam.
Wow.
But I remember when we started this whole thing, at first I got involved because, gee, what's going to be happening to us in this industry? But I found over a period of all this time, this has probably been one of the most useful tools that government could use with the makeup of this committee. It's a broad-range committee, brings in multiple views, and we get a lot of staff input. The amount of staff that we had at that time originally was nothing compared to the resources available today. We've gotten tons of information, and we have to make our information, and I think I've supported it almost every time with some tweaks or some things based upon the facts that we have before us. And even though I don't like some of the things that construction costs, and we've had tons of debates when we get into this, the bottom line is we're trying to save fiscal impacts both for us as a business, for us as a future people that live here, or taxpayers. It's all about that. We got to be symbiotic about how we look at this stuff. And the reason why I made this one change is because it was based on a fact. The fact is, on that particular thing, we have that. And if the facts present itself right, then we should make that adjustment based upon that fact. There are other things that I could debate, but that's the facts that we were presented with. And that's why I'm not going to get into. That's for another discussion another time. And if they go down, they go down. The trend has always been like this. But things have changed over time. And we don't arbitrarily change things because we feel like it should be higher or it should be lower. It is what it is. And you get into the model what you get out. And that was the reason I got involved in the first place, because I was always worried about what went in. Because what goes in is what comes out. And there were sensitivity tests about, is this a reliable tool? And I 100% believe it's a reliable tool. I think it's amazing how this whole process works. So I feel very strongly that even though it's a little tweak, it's an important tweak because it gets and deals with the facts. And I know, we don't want to just drop it for the sake of dropping it, but we're not. We're dropping it because the fact was we had that piece of ground, and that was the result of that fact. And it doesn't change anything else in any other area, but it does in fact do that in that particular area. So I hope I can get support for that motion. It's for the whole enchilada except for that one tweak. And again, even if we change it here, the Board of Supervisors ultimately may bring it back to what it was anyway. Because we're just a recommendation and a body that went through a lot of analysis. So, I love this thing. In fact, I've been doing this for so long, it's almost like I told Ben one day he should buy a Winnebago and live here instead of travel so much. But anyway, I'll
Winnebago generate.
Ben's got the ultimate commute. I mean,
I'm having a WFSD.
But anyway, I see it on both sides, and that, even though it's maybe insignificant, I think is important because it is represented on a fact. And so, if Mr. Chairman, I ask that you call that for the motion and then see where it goes.
Yeah, and we don't need to call the motion. You just right. You give your closing. And
all right, that's it. I'm sorry.
I can take the vote. No, but you'd have a hard time with the 3-minute clock that we get.
Yeah, I know. I should run for office.
And after we're done voting, we'll go through a few comments. So stick around just for one more minute.
Yeah.
All right, the first thing we will vote on is whether or not to reduce the school land costs presented for our discussion by 25%.
On that one area.
Just
the Dulles South. Everything
Dulles
else is
North.
The same.
Dulles
North. Dulles.
Dulles. Let's call it Dulles.
Dulles.
Correct. Okay. A yes vote means you want to reduce it. A no vote means by 25%. A no vote means you do not want to reduce it by 25%. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
No. Let me see the hands and the
that's
no's.
A split.
Three.
Hold on. Let me see the. It can't be a split. I got 9 votes. The hands of the nose. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let me see the hands of the eyes.
Put your hand up, Sam.
All right, Sam was
aye.
All right. That motion will carry 5-4. Okay?
Can
so,
you verify you voted no? Gleason, Colson.
All the no's, hold your hands up again, please.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, the next motion will be to approve the CIF numbers as presented in the packet.
As amended.
As amended in the previous motion, okay? All in favor of adopting the numbers in the packet, CIF numbers in the packet, with the modification of reducing those Dulles school numbers by 25%, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
No.
Let me see the hands of the nose.
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
It's basically to adopt these numbers because we've already said reduce the schools to 25, with the 25% reduction in it. We've already approved the 25% reduction.
Okay.
The alternative is, if the vote goes no, then we got to come up with some other numbers.
Okay.
Okay, let me see the hands of the nose.
I didn't raise my hand for aye.
Okay, so that vote passes 8-1 with Mr. Colsley dissenting. Okay, great. We got there. That's the holy grail of this process.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo. Just a quick thing. Homie made a really good point. You know, there's great data here. This is a fantastic process. Whether you agree with the numbers or not, and, you know, there's a lot of debate, it's a great process. Ben, I have a question for you. Paul, have we ever nominated this whole thing for a Banco Award?
I've been one of the most disciplined processes seen in all the jurisdictions for this.
Not this. We put up the CNA a couple of times. We haven't done this per se.
Should we consider nominating this for a... Vanco is the Virginia Association of Counties. The county just won...
I think you ought to do it. I think it's a great model.
I do too. The county just won 5 awards recently. How many were presented statewide? Like 16? And we also won the Best Picture Award. We got the award too for the the Grammy. What do you think?
We've always tried to go under the radar because anytime we try to bring up the whole, we have a system for proper for negotiating proffers, we get a call from the state and saying, hey, what are you doing extorting?
You know what I would tell you from an industry perspective. I mean, we look at what's going on in Prince William now, and they're starting to ask us, why doesn't Prince William have this?
Well, in fact,
so I think this is a great
thing. In fact, Prince William has copied us, and I think your point is really well taken in that a lot of our peer jurisdictions have, call us on a regular basis and invite us to come and talk and present how we do this and how we have been really successful. And if you'd indulge me for just one second, because...
This is my last fiscal impact. Yes, it is. And like
Hobie, I mean, I probably can't say it as well as he did, but I have been involved in it for 22 years, and it has been an amazing process.
Now, we can believe you're only 22.
I see a tear in Hobie's eyes, but let me say this, Julie. If the day you retire, I'm going to point you to this.
But I will say, for all the reasons that he said, is that, and while my one regret is that you are kind of too large, it really, this quorum thing was really, really tough this year.
Yeah.
And this group, from the very beginning, as diverse as it was just an incredible workhorse group, and really, really, really powerful in the smarts department, and really gave everything. And like he said, not always agreed, but I think we were all richer for the process.
Yeah. And you know, Julie, even though, and I know you made a comment about staff, I don't think what we question on staff has any disrespect to it at all. I think we have a great relationship with staff, and we go through this. I can't say 22, I'm only more like 12 or 14, but if it wasn't for the great staff that we have here, we couldn't do what we did. And Julie, since you're headed out the door, I mean, you're, one of the top shelf people here. And the other thing that this county has that not a lot of other counties have is we have people that stick around.
Yeah.
So it's not like we have turnover. I mean, maybe up there we have turnover, but from a staff perspective, you guys stick around and you get it, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Start asking for campaign donations.
Not on the record. So thank you for everything you've done, Julie.
I couldn't have done it without, especially without my partners in crime here. But, I mean, they really, you're right, the staff here is amazing.
Amazing staff.
And just have been a pleasure to work with.
Going forward, when I take this to finance and ultimately where I'll make the motion, and ultimately I'll make the motion at the board because it comes out of finance, I am not going to modify what this group's recommendation was. I'll present the recommendation as the vote just went down. Okay. Now, that said, any board member can choose to do what they want to do. I will explain what happened. My motion will be what occurred here by majority vote. I will not attempt to override anything personally. I did that on the CNA, but all I did was take out the question center. And the board adopted this group's capital needs assessment exactly as proposed, minus the one change I made. So there wasn't a lot of nitpicking saying, they went with the recommendations of what the work was done in here. And that's how I will present it both at finance and to the full board.
For those of you who might have a dissenting opinion on any of the different parts of this, there is a history that folks who do feel strongly that there's been stuff missed or stuff that they don't agree with have produced minority reports on their own. And if over the next week or two any of you want to put together a letter saying on any of these issues, we can make sure that that's included in the packet, and that has been something that's been done historically.
And then we have a public hearing process.
There is a public
hearing. You are welcome to speak at the public hearing. During this, you'll get your 2 minutes when this item comes up, but any of you are welcome to speak at the public hearing.
We're public.
One thing I'd like to say as a newbie is, you know, I've learned a ton, and I really enjoy this committee, and I really applaud the staff for the amount of information you put together in such a short time. I'm like, wow. You know, so, and I also appreciate the chairman keeping control of these meetings.
It really is an important dialogue to understand.
You guys public, are a lot harder than
public
the other
and private interests together. That's how you vent and really come up with some. And it's probably good for the board members and elected people and even staff to go through a process to see both opinions and how they're evaluated.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, we're all better for it.
In many ways, I wish my colleagues could sit through this and see it happen, because you learn so much about the capital needs of the county, and you don't get that unless you're in this room.
Right.
Historically, there have been, you know, Ms. Lona is the fourth supervisor to chair this. When we first started, there wasn't a board member as part of it. And quite frankly, it was a very unruly session. One of the reasons we as staff wanted a board member was to make it run more
smoothly. We got food, though.
We
didn't get beer, but we got food.
I was going to say, what's the beer?
I have a theory on that, homie. Scott brings food to our board business meetings. He doesn't bring it, but we order food.
Typically,
eat in a closed session, okay, while we can work. Those meetings last 6 to 8 hours. I don't allow food in finance committee meetings. It lasts 2 to 3 hours. So
But it has been invaluable over the years. It was Mr. Roberts the first time around, Mr. Burton, several passes, Mr. Statton for one term, and now Mr. Bonner. And it has, for us in the long run, again, as staff, it has been invaluable to have somebody on the board, at least one member on the board, who has been through all of this and to actually have lived in the numbers.
And the finance person on the board.
I think it has to be the finance person. It's not about, in my mind, it's not about having a board member here to herd the cats. It's about having a board member here that can go back and explain this to the board. Because if you haven't sat through it, you can't explain this to the rest of the board.
I need to leave. I got to get somewhere to drop. Okay,
guys, I really thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you very much.
We will probably do some more work in the spring, but enjoy your holidays and everything coming
headline,
up.
Headline. Just not a test.
Headline is that it's not a bowler.
It's not a bowler.
I already knew that. I just
quit.
Stop.
Right. So hi, all.
Good. See you, Sam. Come back soon, buddy.
Thank you. See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.